welcome back to the What the Fork Sunderland preview show as Sunderland look to halt a grim run of six defeats in a row. That is right, Sunderland have lost five games in a row for the first time since God knows how long. As we approach the weekend, there is just a small matter of automatic promotion chasing Southampton to deal with. Oh, and it's also away. As always, though, you know, we don't shy away from these preview shows, so we will go through it all. And joining me again is the excellent George Rees-Julian of the Daily Echo to chat all things Southampton. George, how are you doing, mate? Are you well?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks. I'm very good, even though a little bit annoyed, a little bit confused about everything that's gone on in Southampton recently. A lot of people would have seen why the game against Preston got called off. So just fingers crossed as we're recording this that the game actually does go ahead on Saturday, but I think it looks maybe like it probably will. Hopefully, fingers crossed.
I mean, if it does get called off, I won't complain. I'll be honest, at this point, I shan't. But I did want to touch on that first. We delayed this podcast purposely so we could discuss your game with Preston, our game with Leicester. And then I was like looking at Twitter and I seen smoke and fire everywhere. I haven't delved too deep into it on purpose. First things first, is everyone all right? And what's the situation?
Well, yeah, by all accounts, it seems like no one's been injured. Obviously, the company that have had this fire are probably not doing too great, but seems like it's in control. We've had a statement from Southampton today as we record this a couple of hours ago saying that there's no fire damage to the stadium. They're still doing some checks and that's why it's still a little bit too early to know if the game will go ahead on Saturday. But seems as though there's no fire damage. It's just a case of can they clear all this debris because that building has now collapsed. Can they get the roads open? And will the assessment mean that health and safety wise, because if you've had a fire just opposite the stadium, I don't know if you want to put 30,000 people next door a couple of days later. So I don't really know how that works from a health and safety perspective. But the club are doing assessments and hopefully, considering how far the Sunderland fans are going to have to travel down, they can get that out nice and early if the game is on or off.
I'm going to say, how likely is it that we, if it was to be off, which would make this podcast completely pointless, so I don't know why I'm speaking about it, but here we are. They called it quite early yesterday, and I'm guessing that's due to the travel. So if it is going to affect anything, Southampton would probably let us know. Probably known my luck by the time this podcast goes out exactly, won't they?
Yeah, I hope so, because I think very much it just comes down to when they can work out from this assessment. I imagine they're not going to sit on the answer for hours to put it out at some optimal time for search reasons. They're going to put it out as soon as they know, because they don't want people traveling down all this time. They want to know as well themselves if they're going to go out, because Russell Martin and the coaching staff will have had to change their whole schedule this week. They probably weren't set to be doing as much as they did today in training as they have done. So there's loads of things that play into it. And I imagine the club will just want to know the answer and get out as soon as possible.
Looking at the Preston game, obviously that didn't happen. So if we could go back to your last game, the one benefit of that postponement yesterday is the fact that your last game was pretty fun from a neutral perspective and pretty good for Southampton in many ways. For those unaware, it was a 4-3 win against Birmingham, at Birmingham, that swung in a million different directions. But a 4-3 win, 96-minute winner is always good. How was the performance, though? Because 4-3 is never perfect, is it?
Well, they started off quite poorly, in my opinion. I thought they could have been 2-0 down. Bakuna had a shot that sort of, I think it came either back off the post and then off Bazunu's back and just wide. And that would have been 2-0 within inside about 5 or 6 minutes. And it kind of looked as though they were going towards another defeat, because they've had the loss to Bristol City, the loss to Liverpool, the loss to Hull, the loss to Millwall. Southampton weren't a team, or aren't a team at the moment, in the form they were in when they went on that unbeaten run and looked completely unbeatable. They have slipped quite a lot from that. And it kind of looked like it was going to be another one of those games where they have to pay for the mistakes they make really early in the game, a lot like the Millwall game when they conceded quite early. But brilliant team move, finished off by Adam Armstrong, got them back into the game, and they kind of started to settle back into it, create some chances, and then another massive error. They Birmingham go down the other end, score another goal. Southampton get two back in a couple of minutes and turn the game back around. Birmingham get a man sent off. Then they equalise with 10 men, and then 96th minute, Joe Rebo pops up. It's the fourth time, I think, we've seen a goal beyond the 90th minute for Southampton away this season to win a game. Definitely feels like a part of their game that is definitely, it's something they work towards. They move teams around so much when they have the ball that when you come into the 90th plus minute, the teams they come up against are just so tired. They almost can't handle it. And when that 9 minutes went up, it was kind of a sense and a feeling that, okay, they're going to win this year. If you've seen Southampton this season, you kind of know they're going to win it. But I still feel like if you're conceding three goals away from home, even if you've scored four, if you're conceding three, I feel like that's more of a worry than scoring four is a benefit, because they should be scoring four and not conceding three, if that makes sense.
Yeah, 100%. And I think on the flip side, like you say, it's massive when you score late. I remember the Roy Keane season, and it felt like we scored a late winner every other week. And the belief that that gives you when you're in a promotion chase is massive. But I sort of looked at Southampton's recent form, and like in the same vein of Leicester, they'd lost, three going into the game against us. Of course, they beat us, probably maybe shouldn't have, maybe deserved a draw. But I thought Southampton had just been on a really good run of form. But when you really dig into it, it's actually a really fun, from a neutral perspective, run of form. They've won the last two away games at Birmingham and West Brom. West Brom away is a great result. But then you've lost the two home games against Millwall and Hull. But you've had a 4-3 win, a 5-3 win in the last 10 games or so at home. It's certainly not boring, but is it
No.
hindering Southampton's automatic promotion hopes with that level of inconsistency that they seem to be having? And why are the results so all over the shop at the moment?
Well, I think when they were on that run, they didn't concede many goals. They kind of got to the point after a tricky start to the season where they were shipping a lot of goals. They'd got to the point where they were keeping clean sheets, or they'd maybe concede one, but they were scoring two, three, four, five at times as well. And they just looked like a team who could blow teams away. And then it kind of started with 3-0 win against Watford. They were a little bit shaky in the first half, even though they made some changes and then some youngsters on the pitch, but came out second half and just blew Watford away. And then in the game against Huddersfield, they were 2-0 down out of almost nowhere. And you kind of felt like, oh my God, the unbeaten run's coming to an end here against a Huddersfield team fighting for their life in the championship. But they turned that game around. And I think after that, a lot of people were kind of positive and thinking, okay, that's a sign of a team who are going to go up because they've had this adversity and they've come back and they've ended up scoring five goals and they've won it in dramatic fashion. But then they go to Bristol City, lose 3-1, and they should have 100% lost that game. They probably shouldn't have even scored because they didn't create too many chances, hit the post, but Bristol City were just so much better than them. And I feel like when they were on that unbeaten run, a lot of people were kind of thinking, myself included, how they react to losing would kind of define if they went up or not. Because you can lose a game after winning and or not losing, sorry, in 20 plus games, and it doesn't matter so much because you've done so well. But if you then back that up with more defeats, then you're kind of working against all that good work you've done previously. And we've kind of seen, like, started off with the 5-0 loss to Sunderland previously this season. They do tend to lose games in patches. And if you speak to people, they'll say that it's tough in the championship to go so many games without losing. You're going to have tricky patches, but they're in a second tricky patch now. And the hope is that that win against Birmingham is going to be the sort of the starting point to crack on again. They've missed out on being able to back it straight up against Preston. And then Sunderland's the last game now before an extended international break with the game against Leicester called off. So they've got 3 weeks or so where they're not going to have a game. And if there's a bad result against Sunderland, then yeah, it's definitely going to hinder the promotion push, because those players for 3 weeks are going to be sitting there thinking, right, we want to get back into this, but they're going to have fallen so far behind that you're kind of looking at turning that into good form for the playoffs rather than good form to try and get that second spot.
It's really interesting when you look at the home form. Well, interesting, intriguing, whichever way you want to look at it. So I've looked at like the last five home games: 1-5-0 win, 2-4-0 wins, 2-1 wins, and 2-2-1 defeats. So five or six games that you've had massive wins or narrow defeats. It does feel, and this is me not watching any of those games realistically, apart from the Bristol City game, which was away anyway, that Southampton either blow teams away, or they come a little bit unstuck at home and lose narrowly. The away form, in large, the results are normal. Wins here, a couple of goals, defeats apart from that 4-3. As a man who's seen his team lose 8-0 at Southampton before, and I don't know if you can answer this, but I'm going to ask it anyway. How can Sunderland avoid being on the wrong end of a big defeat like Swansea were or Sheffield Wednesday were and be more of a Millwall or a Hull that can maybe nick a 2-1 win?
If you ask Russell Martin, he'll say they need to score a freak goal or a rubbish goal, a goal out of nowhere, which is what he seems to describe a lot of the goals they've conceded recently. But I feel like if you're conceding 16 goals in 7 games, then there has to be a trend there. I've looked at them and there isn't necessarily a trend. It's not as if they're being carved open in the same way. They're conceding goals that maybe they don't react to a rebound quickly enough, or one player makes an error and the other team capitalise on it. And I think with the way Southampton play, that is going to happen. If you're trying to have that much possession of the ball, you're going to concede. And I think that a lot of the goals they do concede, if you look at the season as a whole, are from teams who come and press them really hard. That's what we saw Hull do. Hull were relentless in the press. They were so good at it, and they took a 2-0 lead, and they were just then able to hold on to that. I think when a team take a lead against Southampton, there is maybe a little bit of a feeling that, oh, are they going to be able to come back? There's still a bit of scar tissue from last season where the fans have seen the team obviously go behind and not be able to turn it around because they weren't good enough in the Premier League. So I feel like if Sunderland were to come, score a goal maybe out of nowhere, or maybe because they've played the game really well, take a 1-0 lead, as long as they can back that up then with being solid and really restricting Southampton from doing what they want to do, then that frustration starts to grow, especially after the last couple of defeats at home. The fans, not going to say they're going to get on the backs of the players, but when you are frustrated as supporters, you kind of, with the way they play as well, the errors that happen in the game, you kind of grow a bit more frustrated with it. And I think that can really play into Sunderland's hands. I think they need to get an early goal because that is where Southampton do seem to struggle at getting back into games. But sometimes if they score the first goal themselves, it can be 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
Funny when you look at the last game you touched on, because that's what I thought we did really well that day. It was probably our best performance of the season and probably will be come season end unless things change drastically. We were really good on the press, scored in the first minutes, like first sort of 60 seconds, and blew a team away that were in really good form at the time. And I think the 5-0 win that we had was Tony Mowbray's Sunderland and everything that's good about the side in sort of full effect. And then I remember after that result, looking like Southampton were really wobbling. They went on quite a bad run after that. And I'm thinking, okay, maybe they weren't as good as I thought. But I know there's been a few funny results recently, but they're in the picture for automatic promotion. They're the team that most people look at and go, yeah, they'll be there or thereabouts at the end of the season or in the playoffs. So that's almost guaranteed. Things haven't really continued in the same vein for Sunderland, although it's kind of turned for Southampton in many ways because they're going to finish probably top four, top five based on the way the league's gone. Looking back at that 5-0 Sunderland game, was it a big turning point for Southampton, or are they still kind of suffering from the mistakes that they had that day? Because it felt like in some ways it was a huge turning point, but then in other ways you look at it and they're still conceding goals kind of needlessly.
I think that defeat and the defeats that followed definitely helped in a way because they kind of had to learn what they need to do to stop teams to be able to do that. And then they've backed that up with a record unbeaten run. So it's definitely helped, but I feel as though they may be slipping back into that a little bit. Back then, they kind of were conceding goals from errors, similarly to the way they are doing now. But back then, it was worse. It felt more like the goals they were conceding were as a result of how they were playing. Now, it does seem like teams are maybe coming with a set plan. They're going to hurt them in this way. And if you look at the Millwall game, it's come from Gavin Bazunu should claim it, and then Millwall scored a penalty. Look at the game against Hull. Joe Rothwell runs straight into a danger, and Cavalet, what's his name? Fabio Cavallo scores the goal, and then Zaruri scores the first one off a rebound from Gavin Bazunu. So they're not coming so much from the errors, but I feel like they have definitely learnt from that 5-0 defeat. Dodds has said it today, hasn't he? They're going to use that game as fuel for revenge. And I think that's definitely true. They don't seem as a side who are going to forget that. They're going to really, that's going to be Russell Martin's team talk, I imagine. He's going to show them clips of the game and go, we're not letting this happen again today. He seems very much that way motivated. So yeah, it's definitely helped, but they are starting to maybe slip back into that, which is a bit of a worry considering how close we are to the end of the season and just how tight it is.
I think also considering the fact that Ipswich just refused to stop winning games and Leeds look really good. It's tough at the top, but I really, really wish that we were there. It's really odd. I was listening back to that. I always like to listen back to the previous shows I've done if I have a guest on that's coming on again. And we obviously spoke prior to the last game, which I think happened on, I want to say like September the 1st. It was the day after the transfer window anyway. And we discussed Ross Stewart and, you know, would this happen? And we've heard there's links. And at the time when we spoke, it wasn't really on. And then I think like 12 hours later, it suddenly was. So he makes a move for 8 million to the club. Look, he was adored at Sunderland during his time, scored at Wembley, scored plenty of goals for us to get us out of League One. But he's played about 20 minutes of football for Southampton due to the injuries he's had. So I can't really say, look, George, how's he done, mate? So I'll change the question a little bit. I'd love to see him come back from injury. I'd love to see him do well. Someone that me personally has an awful lot of time for. But how concerned are Southampton fans that he's cost a lot of money and he's barely been able to play? And by the time he's back, that's going to be about 20 months he's been out with various different injuries. How are Southampton fans looking at that? transfer at the moment.
Well, considering a lot of the signings Saints have made this season have been loans, with the exception of Ross Stewart and Shea Charles, it kind of feels like they've, because they only had a certain amount of money because of FFP. When you come down, you even though they sold £100 million worth of players, you can't just spend all of that once again because you lose so much money from coming down from the Premier League. But when you've spent basically 30% of the money you've spent in the transfer window on one player who's played, as you said, not even a half of football, there kind of is a frustration with that because you've almost signed a player that isn't for this season, but he's at an age where he should be for this season. It's not like you bring in a teenager, a bit like Shea Charles, who's been brought in. Yes, he can contribute now, but he's kind of one for the future of the club as well. But he's also been bitterly unlucky, hasn't he? Because he came back and now he's got another injury, which, although it's not the same one, it's been sort of indicated that it's kind of as a result of the injury he had, because it's a muscle injury and they tend to happen because you, when you're out injured, you kind of use other muscles, and that's kind of why he's out again. But I think, given how inconsistent Shea Adams has been, there's a theory that he only scores when the transfer window is open, which has kind of been backed up a little bit this season. But at the same time, he started to pop up with goals again recently. But when you've gone out and signed a striker, which is kind of an indication that that is an area you wanted to improve, and then he's out for the whole season and you don't get another striker, then you kind of haven't improved the area you clearly wanted to improve. So I think Southampton fans would have liked to see someone in January come into that position. But saying that Adam Armstrong has been shifted out to right wing rather than at striker, and bringing in David Brooks has, in theory, freed him up to go back to striker. So you've kind of, in a way, got a new striker out of that, even though he was a striker already. But he seems like he's better on the right wing because he can affect the game a bit more differently. So it's kind of a weird one. I think there's obviously the frustration that he has been out, but I think a lot of people also sympathise with the fact that he's come in. He wants to play football, but he just can't because his body's not let him this season.
I think outside of games against Sunderland, I can't speak for everyone, but I wish him massively well. And really sad to see him struggling at the moment, unfortunately. But it does raise a question that, the end goal for Southampton is get promoted, be that playoffs, be that automatic promotion. And I think anything less than that would probably be viewed as a failure, because at the start of the season, you'd probably say, in some sort of order, Leicester, Leeds, Southampton are the three teams you'd expect to go up. So playoffs or automatics. It would probably be a failure if they didn't. However, if they do, Ross Stewart then becomes a player that's untested in the Premier League and hasn't played a game for 20 months. In a weird way, and I'm sure he won't feel this way, but is it probably going to be, I don't know the word here, unbeneficial for Ross Stewart if Southampton do go up, because then he becomes someone who potentially doesn't really fit into the plans they have? Or do you think Southampton seem long term and they just want to get him back fit?
Well, I think the key for that would be if Shea Adams stays or goes. He's in his last 6 months of his contract. Don't know if he's going to sign. Maybe he won't. Maybe he will. Just don't know at the moment. When he was asked earlier in the season, he was very much clear that he's focusing on football, kind of a footballer's answer on that one. But Ross Martin clearly likes Ross Stewart. He wanted to sign him previously. So I don't think he's just going to cast him aside and forget about him. But as you say, he is unproven at that level. He's done it the hard way, as they say. He's come up through the lower divisions in Scotland and he's really created a good career for himself. So, will he be able to do it in the Premier League? We just don't know. I think if Shea Adams goes, they'll probably still want to sign a new striker in the Premier League regardless. But then, if Shea Adams does go or stays, then that new striker would probably jump to first place and then Ross Stewart maybe just behind if Shea Adams has gone. So, I think it's probably a little bit too early to say with that. But if they were to stay in the Championship, then it probably would be beneficial to his playing time, as you sort of alluded to there.
And we look at Shea Adams as well. The big worry for him is probably if he goes to the Euros and does well, which I'm sure he'll be on the plane for Scotland, then all of a sudden he's got more options available to him, depending on where Southampton are or not, in terms of the leagues. But Russell Martin's a funny one. In many ways, I'll openly admit I wasn't a huge fan of him. But I'm getting older in my life here, and I'm getting a bit annoyed with young hip coaches, and that's what he is. But there's a few things he said recently, and I'm like, actually, you know what? Like, you're not too bad. And it does feel like for a long time he's been on the precipice of being like a top level manager that was destined to go to the Premier League at some point. Southampton's the biggest club he's managed, like without a shadow of a doubt, in terms of their potential at least. He could potentially be in the Premier League next season. How have Southampton fans taken to him? Have they got a belief that he can get them to the Premier League? Because it feels like there's a real connection at the end of games when you win in the 96th minute and he's got the fist punch and all that kind of stuff. And I know some people don't like it, but if fans didn't like him, whether he scored in the first minute or the 96th, he's not going to be able to do that. So it appears the fans like him. But is that evident in kind of how they're reacting on Twitter after wins and defeats and stuff like that, that they've got a lot of trust in him?
I think when you take out the vocal minority that all sort of supporters group have, you sort of have those ones that they could lose 1-0 from a freak goal, an actual freak goal, and they'll immediately blame him. You take those out of it, I don't really consider those in this conversation. The general fan, yes, I think they have really grown to love him, partly because of some of the stuff he comes out and says, and he doesn't really like to shirk a question. He'll say it kind of how he thinks. And I think it's quite clear the impression we get from speaking to him and the impression he gives to fans that he has got a lot of buy-in. When he was at Swansea, he wasn't there to kind of make a name for himself. Although, yeah, he was there to make a name for himself, but he wasn't using Swansea as a launching pad to go somewhere else. He wanted to take Swansea as high as he could. And now he's at Southampton, he wants to do the exact same. He wants to get them to the Premier League. So I think, yeah, as you say, he is a young, hip coach. I think you could describe him as that. But I think when you take what he's done this season, even with the little tricky patches, I think most fans appreciate that you can't win every single game of football. And that when you do lose, it can be the manager's fault at times. He has made a couple of confusing tactical switches. But when they lost to Millwall, for example, they were playing with Taylor Harwood-Bellis, who for me is one of the best centre backs in the league, at right back. And then Jack Stevens at centre back, he has played right back as well. Bednarek, and then a left back. And it was kind of the left back would go up, and then they'd have three centre backs. But then Jack Stevens was also a holding midfielder who was dropping into centre back. And it kind of looked like a bit of a mess. But I also don't think that's the reason they lost the game. So people kind of jumped on that. But again, they're just the minority of people who like to sort of blame a coach. So I don't think if you were to, I think if you polled 100 Southampton fans, 90 of them would say, yeah, they do like him.
Yeah, Swansea fans feel the same as well. I've had Luke from the Swans cast on a few times, and you can hear he kind of misses him quite a bit. And I'm going to be honest, he's kind of changed my opinion a little bit this season. In terms of goals scored, Southampton are only behind Leicester and Ipswich. But in terms of goals conceded, Southampton have actually conceded more goals than West Brom, Coventry, Bristol City, and wait for it, believe it or not, Sunderland. This is maybe a really difficult question for it to answer, and maybe a really basic question to ask. But why is it Southampton are more leaky at the back than a lot of teams sort of in the higher echelons of the league?
I think it comes just down to the way they've performed in the two patches of tricky form. That you lost five, we lost 5-0 to Sunderland, conceded four against Leicester, conceded three against Huddersfield in a game that they've won, conceded three against Birmingham in a game that they've won. They just seem to sometimes concede a lot of goals. But luckily, in contrast to Sunderland, they seem to be able to score a lot of goals in the games. They concede a lot of goals as well. Even the go back to the first home game of the season, a 4-4 draw to Norwich. It was crazy to watch, but you leave the game thinking, yeah, this is a good team, even though they conceded four goals because they score a 90 plus minute penalty to draw the game 4-4. So they've kind of got that feeling of, yeah, we might concede three, but we think we've got enough firepower to score four. And that makes it entertaining, but it also kind of makes you go into a game thinking, if they don't turn up today in the attacking sense, then they're going to lose 5-0 like they did earlier this season at Sunderland.
There is an element where, like, maybe I've spoke a lot about conceding goals in this, but I think most Sunderland fans would agree we'd prefer that as well. Like, you'd always take a 4-3 over a 1-0, as much as technically that's your team losing three goals. So I think we can, well, at least I can echo and understand why Southampton fans are kind of okay with it. Going into Saturday, I'm not feeling that confident myself based on current form and adding the fact that Jack Clarke's injured. Patrick Roberts is injured. Luke Nyan's also injured. They're all definitely out of the game on Saturday. So we're a little bit weakened and we're completely out of form. I feel like I'm asking a stupid question here, but I will ask it. How are Southampton fans viewing the game on Saturday, and how confident are they considering our form and the players that we've got out, despite the fact that we beat them 5-0 earlier in the season?
I think they'd be feeling quite confident if they then went and looked at how Sunderland have been doing this season. If they're kind of just remembering the earlier game in the season, they might be worried. But as you sort of pointed out there, it's not the same Sunderland team as it was earlier this season. And while it's also not the same Southampton team, positively and a bit negatively, when you look at the last couple of games, if you've just scored four goals, I don't think you can go into the next game feeling too worried, because they could have scored five or six in that game. And they do look like they're getting back towards that team that are good. So I think a lot of fans will be going into it with their fingers crossed that the game is on, and quite confident that they can back that up with a good win and try and get back to winning ways at home.
Final question, as always. I don't know why I bother doing this. I'm getting worse at it week by week. Although I got one right the other week. We'll go for predictions. I really, really worryingly feel like you're going to smash us because we smashed you early in the season. So there's like extra adage to the fact that we're also not playing well, but you also want to probably batter us. But I think we'll probably play slightly better. We played actually all right during the week against Leicester, and yeah, that's given me a bit of false hope. So I'll go with a Southampton win, but maybe just a 2-1 and a frustrating defeat, which in isolation would probably be all right, but on the back of five defeats could probably be avoided. But I don't think will be. But where do you see the game going, George?
Well, looking at the last five games that you've lost, I mean, the most goals you've conceded in that run is two. So I don't necessarily look at that as a team who, if they're going to lose, are going to lose convincingly. But there's also this case that Southampton have won quite a lot of games at home this season, having scored a lot of goals. And when you've got a front three, if it is that front three on the weekend of Che Adams, Adam Armstrong, and David Brooks, there is definitely goals there. David Brooks has come in, played seven games, got five goal contributions. So there's players there who can score goals. Adam Armstrong, a Geordie, he's going to want to score against Sunderland, isn't he? So I'm going to go for a 3-1 win, because I'm still not convinced they've got that clean sheet in them at the moment, despite the fact they did it at West Brom, which is a real outlier in this little run of games.
Yeah, good result as well, to be fair. Before I let you go, there is obviously stuff that you'll be covering after the game when you speak to Russell Martin and the players and things like that. So on the off chance that we spring a surprise and we want to read how sad Southampton are, where can we find your stuff, George?
The best way to find it will either be going to the Daily Echo website or just finding me on Twitter at Reese underscore Julian. I'll usually tweet anything of interest on there. Tends to be the interviews and the manager quotes, etc. So yeah, those are the best two places to find it.
Mate, always got to catch up. I wish the team you cover absolutely no luck this weekend, but I don't think you'll need it. And thanks for coming on as always, mate. Always got to catch up.
Worries. Amazing. Thank you very much.